Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin the program by taking a look at your digital camera and how to use it. You know how to use it? You know how to use all those little accessories that you have? I'm okay with mine, but there's plenty that I can learn from Jack Socha, and I bet there's plenty you can learn from him as well. He's a photography instructor, author of a new book. It's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's been with us many times, back again today via the phone, and certainly we're inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment, or maybe you've got a photo that you want to share with us, wondering if it's a great photo, or maybe something is wrong with it, and you wonder how it happened. Just put it up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jack Socha, welcome.
Thank you for having me on, and I want to thank all of the listeners who have been checking out the table of contents and the preface to the book, which you can download at our website, acpress.com, to see if it's the kind of thing they want. And also, I'm happy to tell you that Yankee Books in Wausau is now carrying it in a special NPR section, and Pearl Street Books in La Crosse also carrying the book as well. So if you happen to be in those particular cities, you could walk over and take a look.
Ah, very good. And again, your website is acpress.com.
Yeah, I put up the table of contents, and which is very, very detailed, and also the introduction is a downloadable PDF file so people can see if the book is what they really want. I think you'll discover it is. But all the information is up there for ordering, and even a PDF order form if you don't like ordering online. You can just download the PDF and just mail it in. So trying to keep it happy for everybody.
Well, lots of folks, you know, got new digital cameras recently, probably Christmas time over the holiday, or maybe they took advantage of post-holiday sales to buy one. I know friends of ours did that. They bought a camera after the Christmas season when there were some sales.
Usually right around the time the Consumer Electronics Show goes off and the new models are introduced, then all of a sudden the prices on last year's model begin to drop. It's just like with cars.
Yeah.
What
are some of the newer features that people might not be familiar with on their new camera?
Well, of course, one of the big things I keep watching is the increase in the so-called ISO. The ISO used to be called in the old film days many years ago ASA, and the way it works is the higher the number, the more sensitive the camera is to light, which means that you can shoot at a faster shutter speed, or you can shoot in a darker situation and have a much steadier shot than you would have a few years ago. And it's gone from, you know, it used to be if you hit 800 ISO, that was pretty good. And now we're seeing like 6400 ISO. And this is the difference between possibly being able to take that indoor sports shot without a flash or not being able. So that's one big thing to look into. That plus, of course, the zoom lenses are getting longer. And I'm seeing a lot more interest in what they call bridge cameras. You've got your point-and-shoot, you know, which is your smaller pocket-sized camera.
Right.
And you've got your larger, heavier single-lens reflex that has lenses that come off. But the bridge camera is in the middle, both price-wise and size-wise. It has a longer lens to it, sometimes a 20X or 30X lens, but it doesn't come off. And for a lot of people, that camera, which is smaller, it has a dual viewfinder, one large screen and one small screen and an eyepiece, and that long zoom range is really all they really need.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old deal is if the camera is too big that you're going to leave it home, it's not going to do you any good.
Well, and, you know, it may be why, I mean, so many people now are just relying on their phones.
Well, and that's going to come along. The phones are several years behind cameras at this point. And also,
right,
you know, I'm finding, now these are not the brand names everyone thinks of, but they're perfectly good. I'm finding 14 megapixel point and shoot type cameras for $65 now.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, these 14 megapixel images, the tonality is outstanding.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed. And of course, all these companies are competing with each other. It's really important to try to figure out as best you can what kind of pictures you really are planning on taking before you pick out the camera. And also, I'd be curious this particular hour to find out what problems people were having with their pictures to see if we can figure out how to fix it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Steve in Oshkosh has a question for us that might relate to that. Steve, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
I have a question. It's related to digital photography. Is it possible to change an out-of-focus shot with Photoshop?
No.
Okay. You can change everything else.
Yeah. Now, it is possible to make something that is unsharp look a little sharper using something called the unsharp mask. And also by tweaking the contrast, you can sometimes give the impression that it looks a little bit sharper. But that information is simply not there. It's just like an out-of-focus negative. It just does not exist at this point.
Thank you. It's a simple question. You answered it well.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Isn't there a camera now that they say you can do that with?
There's a new camera out called a Lytro, L-Y-T-R-O. Last time I looked, they were $399. At this time, unless things have changed in the past few weeks, they only worked with Macintosh computers. It looked like an oversized lipstick. And what it did was it has about, I don't know, 10 or more lenses arrayed on the sensor. And so when you take the one picture, it basically takes 10 separate shots at the same time, each at a different focus point. And then when you look at it using the special software, wherever you click the mouse, that thing comes into focus.
Oh.
Now, it's pretty version 1.0. Maybe by next Christmas, they won't be $399, and maybe they'll work, you know, more universally. I don't know. Right now, you would be a very, very early adopter.
Okay. We have a Facebook question from Mary Beth, who says, we used to have scrapbooks and photo albums. They lasted for 100 years. How do we store all these great photos now so our descendants can admire us or make fun of us in 100 years?
Well, number one, if you find out and you come up with a method, patent it, because you'll be very rich. Right now, you know, I tell people in my class and also in the book, we're only about 12 years into digital photography. And when photography was only 12 years old, people were still coating glass plates with egg whites and poisonous chemicals to make negatives. We're in the pioneer stage. And frankly, at this stage of the game, there is no sure path for complete permanence at all. What I would suggest is that if you have particular pictures that you are extremely fond of, that you have prints made, and have them made by not an inkjet, but have them made by a regular lab. And if they're really important, have them made by a pro lab that maybe will use very high archival materials. You can see ads for those in most of the photo magazines. Because right now, the digital world changes. I have discs of various kinds that were supposed to be the greatest thing in the world 10 years ago. The companies are gone.
Yeah.
And you know, right now, as I tell people again in the class, that the camera industry has been taken over by the computer industry, and their idea of a really long time is 18 months.
Yeah.
So you got to plan ahead. The good news is that the stuff that you have saved is digital, so as a newer format comes along, you should be able to copy it to the new format. However, if you miss a step, or you wait 5 years, or you wait 10 years, you could be in serious trouble, kind of like having an 8-track tape.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got to be vigilant, I'm afraid.
People who are listening, some people would probably say, what's an 8-track tape?
That's right.
Oh, man. Well, Kevin in Tomahawk has a question for you. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. My wife has got a Canon EOS with the removable lenses and getting into wildlife photography pretty hard.
Right.
And she does a real good job with the pictures she has, but I'd like her to upgrade to something newer, more megapixels. Any recommendations? And something she likes to eventually get those big, huge lenses.
Well, I was going to say the most important thing when you're shooting wildlife or weddings or things like that is to first get the lens and then worry about the camera body later, because the cameras will keep improving as time goes by, as the megapixels go up. But you'll probably end up using that lens for quite a number of years, especially if you have a name brand like Canon, where the mount will stick there. So I don't know how many megapixels she has right now. But before you buy another camera body, I should take a close, hard look at what lenses are available, how much they cost, and how close they'll bring the subject in. Also, what the maximum lens opening is so you can shoot in available light, because you're going to use that lens for many more years than the camera.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. And pretty much when it comes to lenses, there's a pretty good correlation between price and quality, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Generally speaking, the lenses that come, the so-called kit lens, the lens that comes with the single-lens reflex camera, they're not bad, but they're not really pro-quality. And when you start looking at the ones that professional news photographers use, you're starting to see prices in the couple thousand dollar range at least. But that's what you need at this point in our camera development. Eventually, when these ISOs we talked about earlier hit the half million mark, even a modest lens with a modest lens opening will still be able to shoot the kind of pictures that you want. But we have to wait a little bit longer for that to happen.
Yeah. How much longer do you think?
Well, I used to joke several years ago when people said, I want to do indoor shots of sports. I said, either spend $5,000 or wait 5 years. Now I'm saying spend $2,000 or wait 2 years. You got to keep looking at the websites that cover cameras or the photo magazines like Shutterbug, and just keep noting that ISO, because as the megapixels get higher and the ISO gets higher, at some point there'll be a, I hate to use the word tipping point, but you'll finally hit it where even a modest lens will produce pretty good stuff. I'm waiting.
Yeah.
I'm waiting.
Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the click. I have a comment and a related question. I have a high-end point-and-shoot. It's a Canon G12, and it's the problem I'm having is that while the images are great, except at lowest, at the very high ISOs, there's a lot of digital noise, and from what I understand, that's because the sensors in the point-and-shoots are only about one quarter the size as they are on DSLRs. Now, what do you think of the new class of cameras? Those miniature, they're almost like point and shoots, but they have interchangeable lenses. They what they call the four-thirds format.
Right. Yeah, I've seen those. I've seen reviews of those in the photo magazines, and from what I've seen at the higher ISO sensitivity, there's still a lot of noise.
Now, from what I understand, another thing, too, is another problem I have with this Canon is that its autofocus is rather slow, and it's compared to an SLR. And it's also it's just its shutter. You know, you push down the shutter, and sometimes I miss shots because the dang camera is just taking too long to get its ducks in a row before it
right.
can make the shot.
One of the advantages of single-lens reflex cameras, especially that are kind of in the pro price range, is that they're much more responsive all the way through. The focusing is faster, the response time when you press the shutter is faster, and normally you can take a burst of more pictures than you can with a fixed-lens camera. They cost more money, of course, and again, like everything else, this is slowly improving. That's why I say it's important to kind of decide what kind of pictures you're going to be taking. See, personally, I don't need burst mode. I tend to take still lifes, so I don't worry so much about how fast my autofocus is. But in your situation, you would pay real close attention to those things when you look at the reviews. And if you have a chance, go to a full-service camera store and actually try to have them show you one so you can actually try it out.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's odd about these smaller cameras with removable lenses, they don't have any viewfinder aside from the big one in the back. And I'm a real fanatic about having a finder that you can look into outside in bright daylight. So there's some of the bridge cameras have those, and of course all the SLRs do as well.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Bill. Appreciate it very much. Jack Socha, our guest photography instructor, author of the new book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, back from France. And we're very grateful to have her back. She's doing her usual wonderful job here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking digital photography with Jack Socha. Great to have him with us today. Thank you so much for listening in. And if you have a question for Jack, I hope you'll join us. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page and post a question there or a photo there, at just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. If you want to take a look at Jack's new book, it's How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He has, I know he has the table of contents and some other information about it on his website, which is acpress.com. So just go to acpress.com and you can take a look and see many of the other things he has on his site. And Jack, one of the things that that impresses me about your site is you have so much information on, well, things that we're talking about today on the show.
Yeah, one of the most popular pages, which I put up a couple of years ago, is in our photo section. It's all these listings of free image editing tools. I mean,
yeah.
Photoshop is great, but quite frankly, not everybody wants to spend that kind of money. And take a look. Go to acpress.com. Go to the photo section. It's the top article on the photo page. It lists at least four or five programs that I personally use that do a great job, and they range from relatively simple to relatively complex. And for a lot of people, if your picture didn't come out right, for example, it's too dark, you will find ways of adjusting the picture by adjusting something called the gamma and then the contrast, or maybe adjusting the color and the saturation to help fix the picture as best you can. Digital photos are more like slides than film. Film was incredibly tolerant of mistakes, and slide film was not. And you have to think that way. You either kind of get the picture or you don't. It's improving, but still it can be a problem. And these editing programs, which are free, can sometimes make the difference between salvaging a picture or throwing it away.
Yeah, absolutely. And can't beat that price. Free.
No, and it's amazing. Yeah, and I use them all the time. I mean, my wife, who lays out books, uses Photoshop and all this, but for a lot of just basic stuff that I do, cropping and adjusting the color and things like that, I use these programs.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Yeah. There's also, by the way, for those of you who have iPads and iPod touches, and there's a number of image editing programs that are available as apps now that you can download that are surprisingly good.
Bob in Wauwatosa has a question for you. Let's go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Glad you have this terrific guest on again, Larry. I have a question about manual focusing. My Go Everywhere camera is an older camera. It's a Fujifilm E900, and it doesn't have a focusing light. It does have a manual focus feature that utilizes the zoom button. And I would like to be able to take pictures either in very poor light where the camera refuses to focus, or at night where, obviously, you know, how do you take a picture of the moon? And I'm wondering if I need to move up to a digital SLR. I don't know whether they can take pictures under these conditions either. Can you give us some guidelines here?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. You would have to move up to a digital SLR. Digital SLR lenses frequently either have a switch on the lens, or in some cases on the body, that turns off the autofocus, and you simply turn a ring on the lens as you're used to get in focus. Now, the one thing to keep in mind, unlike the old days of film cameras, because these cameras are not really designed for a lot of manual focusing, there are no focusing aids. There's just kind of a ground glass, so you kind of have to focus back and forth until you get it where you want it. The other possibility is also many of these cameras, especially the Canon line, have adapters that you can buy to allow you to put on older manual focus lenses from 35mm film cameras, and so you can also try one of those as well if you want to do more precise focusing. But in either case, your split images and your microprisms, they're not there anymore, and so along with the manual exposure setting, these are features that that a lot of folks never even discover, and many don't even use.
Yeah,
but they are there. But you're not those ones where you focus with a motor on littler cameras. Those are almost useless, and so you really have to get an SLR.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Wayne in Madison, on to you. Hi, Wayne.
How are you doing?
Good.
My situation is a little different. I think I did quite a bit of photography some years back. And I had Nikon and some really nice Nikkor lenses, like the 50 to 300, which weighed about 6 pounds, and it was like a $2,400 lens back then. Are those obsolete now, or can I, convert to a digital body with those lenses?
I would do a little bit of searching on the net. I believe that They will fit. You're not going to be getting programmed exposure and all that stuff. You may have to get an adapter. I'm not sure about that. But Nikon used to be very famous for having their oldest lenses work. You may end up with manual exposure, and, of course, you're going to have manual focus. And maybe in a couple of cases, you might not be able to focus to infinity if you have an adapter. But I do believe you can use some of those, yes.
Okay, because that was such a good lens, that 50-300. I take pictures of the airplanes flying at Oshkosh, and you can see the expression on the pilot's face in that. It's a really good, really good glass.
I will tell you this, though, that after you start shooting autofocus for a while, the autofocus has gotten so good that, in my case, I had a similar situation with some other lenses, and little by little, you stop using the old lenses.
Yeah.
Just letting you know, the new lenses are really pretty good.
So seeing these Nikkors are basically obsolete?
No, they're not obsolete, but I think you're not going to use them as much as you think.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Judy and Bloomer next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I missed just a few minutes while I was going from my car to the house, and you were talking about these bridge cameras. Can you expand on that and give us an idea of what a good price would be and what we would look for?
Oh, sure. I happen to like bridge cameras. They look like a small single-lens reflex camera with a lens that zooms, but it doesn't remove.
Okay.
And the better ones have two finders. They have one, the large finder you normally see, and a smaller screen inside what looks like an old-fashioned optical finder. And the advantage is that when you're outside and no one else can see their screens, you could look in that little eyepiece and see a miniature version of the screen.
Uh-huh.
Most companies make them. They range roughly anywhere from about $150 to $250 or maybe $300, depending on the zoom range and depending on, you know, how many features they have. There's a couple of them out there I've seen where they have taken out the eyepiece viewfinder, and I would not get one of those because you're not going to be able to focus or compose that long lens with that screen in the back and hold it steady.
Mm-hmm.
So there's several very good brands out there. Sony has them, Canon has them, most of the major companies have them, and they're called bridge cameras. They're bigger than they're smaller than an SLR, and they're bigger than a point and shoot.
Okay, yeah. and should I look for, I don't even remember what you said, for the other one, megapixels? Or?
Well, check, the current ones are probably 14 to 18 megapixels.
Okay.
And, again, the zoom lenses, the ranges can be 20 to 30x zooms. That will adjust the price somewhat. And they have frequently steady shot and, you know, face detection and all these bells and whistles they all have now.
Okay,
and
great.
And most of them will also do HD movies as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay, thank you so much.
Sure. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And more callers online, we can get you on pretty quickly if you call in at 1-800-642-1234. We do have some open lines, 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Judy and Madison next. Judy, hi.
Hi, great show. Only problem with it is it doesn't last long enough. I have a Canon PowerShot that's maybe 3-4 years old, which I like a lot. The best feature of it is it has a viewfinder, so when it's sunny out, I can still see. And I compose my picture in the viewfinder. The problem is when I go and put it on the computer, I try to crop it to a 4x6, and I'm cropping out part of my picture. I've tried resetting it to different settings, and I don't know what setting to set it to, so I get a 4x6 print picture.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, each print has a different aspect ratio, 4x6, 5x7, 8x10. One of the programs that is on my site at acpress.com has a beautiful cropping feature where when you go to crop, it asks you what size print are you making, and it draws the little rectangle at the appropriate ratio. So you're basically going to have the same, you know, the situation you would have with a film camera. Your file is a particular shape, but you're going to have to think ahead and maybe include a little more in the picture. So no matter what size print you make, you'll be able to not chop off heads and things like that.
Well, that's not exactly my question. My question is going into the menu part, and I have different choices for what kind of a picture, what size picture I'm going to take. And how do I know which one to choose?
Well, for number one, I would always pick the highest resolution. If you've got, say, a 12-megapixel camera, always pick 12 megapixels because you can always make it smaller later. But if you use the smaller one, you can't make it bigger. That's more to save space. It's kind of an obsolete thing these days. Some of them have also a choice of, do you want a 16x9 shape for display on widescreen TVs? But basically, if you set the camera for the highest resolution, you'll get the largest picture, and then when you do your cropping, you won't be losing as much.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Facebook question from Laura. Can you recommend some great SLR digital cameras that fit into a $500 price point budget?
Well, everyone seems to like the basic Canon Rebels. The first thing I would do is ask yourself, what kind of pictures are you planning on taking? Because if you're going to be doing available light portraits, for example, you might be better off buying the 50mm 1.8 Canon EOS lens and putting that on an EOS body as opposed to buying the kit, that includes the zoom lens. So in that price range, they're pretty much the same. You've got some basic Rebels, there's some Sonys. They're all going to have a so-called kit lens that goes from a little bit wide angle to a little bit telephoto. But you need to ask yourself, that's great for all-purpose snapshots, but if you're planning on doing sports photography, outdoor animals and stuff like that, you may have to buy a different lens. And that may jack the price up a little bit.
Yeah. Steve in Madison emailed and wonders, says, I'm a landscape architect. I need a lightweight, easy-to-use camera that can take pictures of the landscape and within an instant, a close-up of a flower. Any suggestions of the bridge camera?
I'm thinking the bridge camera would be a good choice. Some of them even have a grid screen that pops up on the screen to help you keep them level and things like that. I would think almost any of those bridge cameras would do.
Yeah.
And they're now 14 and 16 megapixels, so you've got plenty of place to crop away stuff if you need to change the shape of the picture or whatever, and you're not going to lose much quality.
Yeah, and he says they're really for educational use, not intended to win a major award.
Right, and I would definitely be getting a camera that has a electronic viewfinder that you can look into as well as a screen on the back, because you're going to be outdoors a lot, and unless you're going to carry some kind of a towel to hang over your head like the old-fashioned cameras, you're not going to be able to see the screen.
Email from Peter and Cable, will your book help him make an older digital camera make better use of the manual features of my camera to photograph my furniture pieces for record keeping as well as publication? I have an Nikon Coolpix 4300.
Well, the book covers, it starts out with the basics of resolution, compression, digital zoom, the things you really need to know. It does explain apertures and shutter speeds, and it will give you a better understanding of any camera, because these are pretty much universal things. Towards the back end of the book, there are more bells and whistles, which you may or may not have, and in some cases, I even say, if you never discover this thing, like a metering pattern, it won't matter, because not many folks use that. But it also covers aperture priority, shutter priority, manual exposure, should you wish to delve into those. So yes, that will help you use your older camera as well.
Diane in Wauwatosa up next. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Hi, Jack. I have an inexpensive camera. I'm an amateur photographer, and I do a lot of craft. I need pictures for my crafts that I make.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a lot of trouble just getting a really nice, sharp, close-up picture of like a 3x3-inch photo. Do I need a tripod to get a decent picture?
A tripod is always a wonderful thing, because when you're shooting up close, you're essentially magnifying the image, just like if you were using a big telephoto lens. So that's important. I'm assuming your camera has a little tulip symbol for macro on it.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's your close-up setting, and that brings you down to much closer. I would get a small tabletop tripod, and I also would look into some kind of lighting that may increase the shutter speed and also make the lens opening smaller so more is in focus as well.
Okay.
And also don't forget to have a nice plain background.
Okay.
so it shows things off. You can buy a couple of painter's lights, or I even use LED lights occasionally to light up things, and they work rather well.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Rick in Oshkosh. On to you. Hi, Rick.
Hi. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Our congregation runs a thrift shop, and we get a fairly regular number of donations of old cameras, you know, 35-millimeter SLRs and so on. It grieves me to people keep saying, well, just throw them away. And I said, no, there must be some place where I can recycle these, or there are people who collect them or something. Can you give me an idea where I might go to so I could get – so I'd like to get rid of these things and give them to somebody who might be able to put them some use or find some value out of them.
If they're 35-millimeter – point-and-shoot cameras, you know, the non-removable.
Yes, yeah.
I was over in Marshfield, Wisconsin. I stopped by St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, and they had a mountain of them for 50 cents a piece.
Oh, yeah.
I hate this. You know, Kodak just went bankrupt.
Yes.
So it's just terrible. I mean, I look at some of these cameras and go, my gosh, these were great cameras. But But they were. Single-lens reflex cameras may be a different story. And should you find someone who gives you some nasty old camera called a Leica, then you've got something. But I hate to say it, but most of your point-and-shoots, good, bad, and ugly, they just are not selling. It's amazing.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, and yet they don't recycle well either. I mean,
it's terrible. I wish you could figure out something to do with them, because I look in these stores and I look back at these cameras and I go, wow, this is the good one. And and then you buy it for 50 cents and you take it home, and 6 months go by and you never put a roll of film in it. You know?
Yeah. James in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, James.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
All right. Thanks for this great show. I just got a quick question in terms, I get in that middle category between the point-and-shoots and the DSLRs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm trying to invest in a camera that would work great as photography, and I want to the HD movie area. And in that area, the cameras like the T3i work great. I'm just wondering if you've ever used the T3i or even possibly the Panasonic GF3, which just came out.
I have used some still cameras for movies. I am not the biggest movie buff in the world, and I don't really even have an HD digital at this point. One of the things to look into that I heard was that you should take a look at the specifications of the camera and see, number one, how long they will keep filming. There were a couple of limitations. A couple of the higher-end cameras that were doing HD, they only shot video for a few minutes because the sensor actually was heating up. So look at the specifications and go to a site like Steve's Digicams and read a bit more about that. Also, there are questions as to whether you want the thing to focus while it's videoing. Most do not. Will there be any motor noise from the zooming if you choose to zoom, if you can even zoom, and things like that. I'm still kind of old school. I still think if you're going to be shooting video at this stage of the game, you might want to shoot with a video camera and then get a still camera for still pictures. However, I will be the first one to admit that is getting old school.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just thought I'd call in and ask it.
I was watching a music video in our area being made a few months ago, and these guys had professional dollies and all that, you know, video stuff, and they were using high-end Canon EOS cameras as video cameras. Now, that was to be used only for TV-type stuff as opposed to being used on a big screen.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's kind of amazing.
Thanks, James. Cass in Appleton, your turn. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. I'm going to go on a hunting trip up to the Arctic for muskox, and I wanted a camera that's going to withstand the cold. So when you take it out of your camera bag, you don't want it to freeze up on you. And what do you recommend?
Well, first thing I would be doing is I would definitely go to a full service camera store and talk to them a little bit more, because you may even have to get a camera that is winterized. I mean, when things get that cold, these gears freeze up. You probably are going to want to get a camera, probably be a digital single lens reflex, that would have an external battery pack that you could keep inside your coat. That's a really highly specialized area. You may even have to buy one and have it sent into a repair place that specializes in winterizing cameras. In fact, the first thing I would do would be doing a web search for winterizing
your camera for, you know, extreme cold and see if you find specialty places that have done that.
Hmm.
Okay.
Because most of these cameras we're talking about are not designed for those kind of extreme conditions.
Yeah.
There you go.
I've had problems before where I took it out of the bag and it says detecting moisture and it shut down on me, so obviously that's...
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a problem with if people go skiing and they have the camera hanging around their neck and it freezes solid, then they bring it inside, and then all of a sudden the moist, hot air condenses inside the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some serious problems going on. You're facing the same challenges as a person who shoots underwater, only in a different element.
Yeah.
So you need to go to a specialty shop who really knows what they're talking about.
Good luck. Thank you for calling, Cass. Paul in Lac des Flambeaux, it is your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have my longest lens right now is a 300 millimeter, and I'm looking for something longer for long wildlife shots. Tell me what to do. I want to either go with a 400 with a teleconverter or possibly digiscoping where you add a high-end spotting scope onto a DSLR.
I would think the high-end spotting scope would be really hard to focus and frame. I'm more inclined towards getting a teleconverter. Usually the biggest ones you should be trying are either 1.5x or 2x. Once you get past that, it begins to magnify a lot of aberrations and things like that. And in many cases, you want to get one made by the same company that makes the lens. In fact, there are some, they used to call them matched multipliers, that were made for specific lenses. But, yeah, that would be your best shot. The good news is if you also get a higher resolution camera, that you'll still be able to crop the image and what's left will still be good enough for a decent print.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. And a Facebook question from Andy. Could you recommend a program to reduce the size of a bunch of pictures at a time?
Oh, and I can get you one for free.
All right.
Go to acpress.com and go to the photo page and go to that page on the free image editing programs. There's the one with the funny name, Irfan View. That one will batch process pictures down smaller, batch rename, do all kinds of batch stuff for you, and it's absolutely free.
Oh, boy. That's wonderful. You made a lot of people really happy, Andy in particular, I'll bet, Jack. Thank you so much. And again, your book?
How to Use the Digital Camera, you just bought, and you can preview the table of contents and the introduction, which will give you a lot of information about what's in the book, at the website, acpress.com.
And available at a couple of bookstores around.
Yes, we're now at Yankee Books in downtown Wausau and Pearl Street Books in La Crosse.
Jack, always a pleasure. I hope we can do this again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Jack Socha, photography instructor, author of the new book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. Always great. It's really a lot of fun when we have him on. And, of course, digital cameras are great for preserving memories of the fun times and family and friends and vacations and so forth. And he always has some great tips. Next up, we'll talk about Mac computers and gadgets with independent Apple computer consultant Joe Rhodes. He has some great advice to share, and he'll be happy to help you troubleshoot as well. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.